Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I am your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies, I tell stories, I share some of the mistakes I've made along the way on my journey on things like design thinking and project-based learning and inquiry-based learning, and really anything where you are empowering your students with voice and choice. And if that's you and that's the type of teacher you are, this podcast is for you. And with that in mind, there's a good chance you have students working collaboratively. You have them in teams and groups. And as you plan out your project-based learning and design thinking units, there's a good chance that they're going to be working together. It's not going to happen, you know, in isolation. And we know that collaboration is one of those vital lifelong skills, but we also know that it doesn't always happen. So today we're going to focus on how to make the best out of collaboration. And in particular, think about the biggest pitfalls that we experience, the four biggest pitfalls that we experience in collaboration, and what we can do to mitigate that. So we've all been there before. You're working with this group of people and everything just seems to click. It might be on a ball field or a court if you're into sports, or it might be a jam session or a rehearsal for live theater if music or theater is your jam. And if you're lucky, it might be a collaborative team of teachers that you work for. And here you're working in this small group and you're bouncing ideas back and forth and you offer honest feedback from a place of trust and mutual humility. And the mood shifts often from intense concentration to laughter to deep discussion. And maybe, if you're lucky, even some vulnerability. And in these moments, you realize that you have something special. You understand that together you are creating something that you could never create on your own. On the other hand, we've all experienced the downside of small group collaboration, where things move slowly with constant discord or just flat disengagement. And deep down inside, you wish you were working alone because it's so much better than being on a dysfunctional team. In some cases, the team dynamics create an environment that's downright toxic. As teachers, we've seen these two extremes as well, sometimes within the same projects. We've had students in small groups experiencing the same collective sense of flow that you have when you're working with a team that you really trust and you have the same goal in mind, right? You see that with your students and you watch in amazement as they generate creative ideas and offer meaningful feedback and create something, again, that they could never create on their own. And I hate the term synergy because it's one of those corporate-y overused word, but that's kind of what it is, right? Like everything is working together so much better than just the sum of all parts. And in these moments, you realize that your students have moved beyond just cooperating together to actually collaborating together. But you've also had those moments where group work didn't work at all. When one student dominated, or when members simply checked out, or when collectively they just didn't even get started on their work, right? Creative collaboration is a critical part of PBL and design thinking. But it's not as simple as just assigning kids to the right teams and then walking away. Collaboration is hard work, and that's because it's deeply relational, and well, all relationships have challenges. In other words, collaboration is hard because people are hard. But as teachers, we can be proactive in the way that we design our creative collaboration, and we will never prevent all the pitfalls. But we can reduce some of those pitfalls by thinking ahead of time about it. And that's what I want to focus on. So here are the four biggest pitfalls. Pitfall number one, one student does all the work. Remember those group projects in high school where you did all the work and the other students on your team got all the credit? Researchers have a term for this. It's called cognitive loafing, which is just a good name for being lazy. It's where team members assume someone else is going to take care of the work and they just pull back and wait for others to do the job for them. Why bother working if you can get full credit without the work? But actually, I think it's a little more complicated than this. There are a lot of reasons why students might disengage. I was thinking about this. It could be fear and insecurity. They feel that their skills are too low, and so they just let others take over because they don't want to get in the way, and they don't want others to see how low they are. Why try if it's not going to be good enough? Sometimes it's the work itself is just too difficult. A group member might not have the skills to do a particular task in a project-based unit, right? And it's easier to let someone who has more expertise handle it. And that's especially true if you're on a time crunch. Sometimes it's confusion. A group member doesn't know what to do. They lack clarity in terms of tasks, and that lack of clarity makes them disengage. Sometimes it's a lack of motivation, truly. They just aren't interested in the project, and they don't feel like they have much of a say in it, and they don't really like it, which leads to the other one, which is there's just no buy-in. A group member who doesn't have a sense of ownership is going to have a hard time sticking with a project. So if pitfall number one is one student's doing all the work, what is the solution? And I think the solution is to build interdependency into what you do. Often, the default in a project is for one member to work independently while others are dependent on that single member. And then they just fill in the gaps when they're needed. The solution is to have students work interdependently. And think about it this way. If independent learning is being fully autonomous and doing things on your own, and dependent learning involves, you know, depending on another person, interdependence is that overlap. You can kind of think of it as a Venn diagram with the overlap between dependent and independent. And this is where students have autonomy and they have a voice, but there is mutual dependence on one another. When students work interdependently, each member is adding value to the group project. No student can really bring the group down. And what does this look like? One of my favorite examples is brainstorming. Interdependent brainstorming is when you have students create a brainstorm on their own, and then they add the ideas to their group into a larger brainstorm, and then they narrow it down collectively. And then they can decide ultimately on what they're going to do. And that's different than traditional brainstorming, which would just be one or two loud voices share all their key ideas. Now, that's a small example. That's interdependency in brainstorming. In research, it would be having every student adding additional information to the group's shared knowledge. So they combine their background knowledge, they teach one another, they can read text and do interviews, and they're constantly updating their group members on the things they're finding out through research. And so even if you're a student who struggles, even if you're a student who seems like they would be behind, this is your chance to add something to your group. And going back to that, you know, the reason why kids check out. Well, these are very low barriers of entry, right? Every kid has a chance to add something. So it reduces that fear and insecurity. It reduces the difficulty. And then it potentially creates more buy-in because everyone has to do it, right? They have to depend on each other. And it can potentially add more motivation. Now, I will point out that sometimes as a teacher, you have to design the differentiation into these mixed-level groups. You might provide specific scaffolds for students, such as sentence stems or tutorials. In some cases, you might assign roles that correspond to skill levels. When students move from inquiry to research, they often need to narrow down their questions. And one of the things that I found that works really well is to assign different members different roles. So a student who struggles a bit, they get to check every group's question and judge, you know, is this on topic, right? And then another one who's a little bit higher, understands it a little bit, they can help figure out, is it fact-based? And then another member, their job is to ask, is it specific, which is a really tough thing to judge. And what you're doing in this process is you're giving every member a job and a responsibility and a role, but you're also recognizing, hey, some kids have more expertise, and that's okay. You might, as a teacher, need to pull small groups in the midst of these interdependent projects. You might need to do some intervention, and that's okay too. We need to have some small group intervention. We need to have some direct instruction within project-based learning classrooms, because sometimes kids need that extra help, and that's totally okay. All right, so with that in mind, let's move to pitfall number two. This is really similar to number one, which was when one kid does all the work. This is when one student dominates this. And the second pitfall is similar, but instead of thinking about it like this kid's doing all the work, this is where one person determines the entire creative vision for the group. In some cases, a single student is highly talented, and the others just kind of say, hey, let's let him or her run with it. In many groups, the student who dominates isn't even aware of the behavior. They're just kind of, it's what they do. They're excited. They might feel that they are passionately defending an idea or engaging in meaningful dialogue, and they have no idea that in the process, others aren't getting a voice, especially students who might be lower in skill level or sometimes students who are just quieter and more introverted. So what do we do about this? I think the idea here is to incorporate individual voice into collaboration. And this is similar to what I brought up with that idea of incorporating interdependence. It's the idea that even within a collaborative project, students should have individual ownership of specific tasks. So if they're brainstorming, again, they all have a chance to brainstorm on their own. If they're doing research, they all do that on their own. If they're working on a STEM challenge and they're prototyping, each one of them could work on some part of the prototype, and then someone else, you know, you kind of bring those ideas all together as a group. And so they're moving back and forth within it. Other times, it means having a shared leadership model and giving different students ownership over different parts of the project. So maybe you have a student who's an editor, maybe you have a student who is the project manager, and you set up roles where they can own those elements of the project. Sometimes they may switch, you know, the ownership of specific phases in a project. So maybe a student owns the inquiry phase, another student owns the leadership of the ideation phase, and so on and so forth. But the idea is that you move around who the group leader is. You don't have a single one leader. The other idea is, again, that you're allowing for moments where they can be working individually. Pitfall number three. If the first two pitfalls involved a single person dominating, this is the pitfall of groupthink. And groupthink occurs when the entire group makes collectively bad decisions. If you want to think about groupthink, imagine, you know, Pixar in Cars 2. I mean, that was just Mater in Japan. What were they thinking, right? So that's pitfall number three. It's groupthink. And often these teams get along really well. There's often this collective overconfidence about how awesome their work is. And they no longer engage in some of the vital critical feedback they need in order to get better. Sometimes they fail to give each other critical feedback at all. And so one of the solutions here is real simple. It's to use intergroup peer feedback. It's easy to think of classroom collaboration with all the groups working in silos, figuratively, of course, because, you know, physical silos would be really awkward as a class design. But they're all working by themselves, right? And these collaborative teams, they go through the entire project, and they might as well be in different buildings because they never really talk with each other. And the easy solution here is to just send one member to another group during a small part of the project. They might, for example, do some research for another group and add some important information. Or during the ideation phase, you may have a gallery walk and every group rotates around and offers new ideas with sticky notes. Other times, you might have every group member disperse and they all find partners. I have included on the corresponding blog post for this particular podcast the 20-minute peer feedback process. And I love having students leave their base groups, work with other partners, give each other peer feedback, and then together they take that feedback and they discuss it with their original groups. And again, it takes a while, but if you think about it this way, it's 20 minutes for them to move, go through the process with each other, and then it's about a 5 to 10 minute debrief. So it's only taking half an hour and they gain so much information from this process. Pitfall number 4 is an inability to resolve conflict. Sometimes group members fight with each other, and they simply can't resolve their conflict quickly. This is especially true in projects where there is already mutual buy-in and interdependence. Sometimes the conflict is personal, right? I mean, personalities are going to clash. It's what happens. And sometimes kids just get careless with their words, and they can sometimes be immature. And sometimes adults can be the same way. We've all experienced it. But there are other times where it's less about personality and more about clashing creative visions. And I want to point something out about the clashing of personalities. When it's deep and when it's personal, you may have to step in and do some conflict resolution as a teacher. You may need to have peer mediators and stuff like that. But often the inability to resolve a conflict is more about a clashing creative vision. Now, when I was a kid, I used to watch this show, VH1 Behind the Music, and nearly every band broke up due to, quote, creative differences. And part of this is ego, with members feeling that their ideas are better than the others, but sometimes it's a genuine difference in the creative direction of a band. So if you think about whether it's a personality issue or a creative difference, conflicts are going to happen. It's going to be a part of what we experience. Pitfall number 4, you can't completely avoid. But the solution here is to really focus on spending time building trust. Trust is vital to interdependent work. Members need to depend on each other, and it can feel risky to be vulnerable. It can feel difficulty. But trust is vital if they're going to trust one another to get tasks done. Trust is vital if they're going to give and receive critical feedback. Trust is just part of what's needed for well-functioning teams. I recently created this sketch video to help students see the connection between trust and feedback. It was a recent podcast episode as well. And I love this idea of getting them to see the role of trust within their groups and how that connects to feedback. And you can have conversations about things like assuming the best motives of the people around you. But I'll also point out that you can't just walk into a group and say, hey guys, you need to trust each other. You have to develop it. And so sometimes you might need to do team building activities before you even start with a project. It doesn't have to be a cheesy icebreaker. Like, I hate icebreakers. I'm an introvert. I'd rather the ice melt slowly over days or weeks or in some cases years. But it's the idea of creating these experiences that lead to deeper trust. Spending a little time earlier in this team building time can help develop long-term trust. But the reality is there's no shortcut to developing trust. It takes time. And this is why, as an eighth grade teacher, I often had teams work for an entire quarter, sometimes a semester, in their teams before breaking up the grouping. Now, don't get me wrong. I might have kids, again, move to different groups at different times for different tasks within their projects. I certainly would have them give peer feedback and things like that. We were moving around a lot in our class, but the teams, the collaborative teams they were on, we kept the teams the same for about 9 weeks at a minimum. And that's because there's something valuable that happens when they really take the time over a longer period of time to develop trust. I want to point out one final thing about this. Notice that these solutions, they're not isolated solutions. They work in tandem to boost collaboration. Interdependence and trust work together, for example. Having individual voice is a part of interdependence, and so on and so forth. They also require structure. Now, this was a hard lesson for me as a teacher. This was one of my big mistakes. I had some projects early on where I just said, hey guys, go for it. And then I would let students work on the project, and I gave very vague directions, and I said, work in groups. And it didn't work. And it's because in my goal of empowering students, I was worried that specific structure would make the projects less authentic. But the reality is structure is a part of what we do and use in collaborative work. If you think about it this way, often outside of teaching, when we engage in collaborative work, we will use structures. Now, some of these might be informal, but you might use a mastermind structure for peer feedback, which is very regimented. Or it might be a little bit looser, but you use a round-robin structure to get ideas across. You might have rituals that you've created as a team. You might talk about your objectives or ideas ahead of time. But the point is that structure should facilitate creativity. It should help develop trust. And in the end, it should boost collaboration. It should actually facilitate more of that ownership and interdependency. That said, I want to admit this. Even when we as educators plan things well and focus on these preventative aspects, collaborative work will never be perfect and it will never be easy. Kids are going to argue with each other. They're going to check out and wander around the classroom. And the reality is collaboration takes practice, and part of the practice is mistakes. There will be mistakes. But that's the beauty of it. Even when the pitfalls happen, these pitfalls are opportunities for students to learn and to grow and ultimately to develop the vital soft skill of collaboration. So thank you so much for listening to the Creative Classroom Podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy this podcast, would you leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher? That would mean the world to me. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something awesome.